Welcome to the first IFRS Foundation podcast of 2020. My name is Claire Short and I'm part of the communications team. Today I'm joined by Vice Chair of the International Accounting Standards Board, Sue Lloyd, and Board Member Nick Anderson, and we'll be talking through some of the highlights from the January board meeting. This includes projects that have moved from our research program into the standard setting phase, pension benefits that depend on asset returns, and the important topics of IFRS 17 and IBOR reform. We'll start by looking at the research program. Nick, can you give us a little context on what this is and where it fits into our standard setting work?
So, all our projects begin with research to explore the issue, identify possible solutions, and decide where the standard setting is required. If we find sufficient evidence that an accounting problem exists, that the problem is important to users and wide-ranging to warrant a change in a standard or issue a new one, and importantly, that a practical solution can be found, we then begin standard setting. Every 3 to 4 months, the board receives an update on the research programme. At our January meeting, the staff asked the board to review 2 key research projects and recommend whether these should move to the active standard setting agenda.
Thanks, Nick. Let's dive straight into the first of these projects, subsidiaries that are SMEs. Nick, could you please explain what this project is about, especially as some stakeholders may confuse it with being related to the IFRS for SMEs standard?
Absolutely. It's probably best to focus on the objective of this research project, and that's to see whether it's feasible for us to permit some subsidiaries to apply IFRS standards, but to give less disclosure than at present. Because most subsidiaries do not have public accountability, our starting point is to consider whether we can develop a new IFRS standard by taking recognition and measurement requirements in full IFRS standards and combine these with the disclosure requirements in the IFRS for SME standard. The new standard would apply on a voluntary basis to subsidiaries of a parent company that do not have public accountability. We found that developing such a standard will benefit both groups of companies and the users of subsidiary financial statements, as it will permit reduced disclosures and correspondingly reduced costs for preparers. And secondly, it will eliminate disclosures that are not targeted to the needs of the users of these financial statements, thereby providing only relevant information. So assessing these benefits, the board decided to move the project to standard setting. Our next step is to decide whether the consultation document should be a discussion paper or an exposure draft. The second research project that the board considered was a proposal to make targeted amendments to IAS 37, provisions, contingent liabilities and contingent assets. This has become a maintenance project. We also decided that the scope of the project should be limited to 3 issues. Aligning the liability definition and requirements with the conceptual framework. Secondly, clarifying which costs to include in the measurement of a provision. And finally, specifying whether to include or exclude own credit risk in the measurement of provisions.
We've also gathered some momentum on another research program project, and that is the pensions benefits that depend on asset returns. Nick, can you share what the board discussed regarding this project?
Yes, Claire, this is a narrow scope research project about pension benefits that depend wholly or partly on the return on a specified pool of assets. Applying IAS 19, a company uses assumptions about future returns on the specified assets in estimating the amount of benefits to be paid to employees and applies a discount rate in determining the present value of the estimated benefits, i.e. their value today. As a consequence, the present value calculated in this way could overstate the liability and thereby not produce information that's considered relevant to investors. The board's heard details on the background of the project as well as proposals on solving the measurement inconsistency. The project will look at whether it would be feasible to eliminate that measurement inconsistency by capping asset returns used in the estimates of pension benefits that depend on asset returns, without changing other aspects of IAS 19 employee benefits. The next step in this project is to consider some illustrative examples to compare different outcomes under the existing requirements and the capped asset return model.
Thank you, Nick. Moving on to current standard setting projects, Sue, can you fill us in on developments with regards to both IFRS 17 and IBOR reform?
Sure. So since November last year, we've been discussing the feedback that we got on the exposure draft that we issued last year proposing some targeted amendments to the new insurance contract standard, IFRS 17. So this month we continued our discussions on the feedback and we talked about a number of topics. I'll just mention a few of them. One of them, firstly, is important particularly for the banking industry. It's talking about when our banks need to apply the financial instrument standard, IFRS 9, to credit card contracts and when they should apply IFRS 17. So we talk about credit cards that have got aspects of insurance in them. At the meeting this month, we decided to slightly extend the scope of what was proposed there to take more contracts out of the scope of IFRS 9. In particular, people told us that not only credit cards, but some payment cards also had this type of insurance attached to them. So the board was sympathetic to that feedback. And we also made a change from what was in the ED. Basically, what we've said is if you've got a credit card contract and the contractual terms are such that there's insurance, then you account for the insurance piece of the contract using IFRS 17. So we expect that that should be well received by the banking industry. We also talked about a very geeky topic, the prohibition of applying the risk mitigation option retrospectively, and essentially confirmed what was proposed in the exposure draft on that topic. And we agreed to introduce a new accounting policy choice in the context of interim financial statements, which gives a reporting entity the choice of how they prepare their interim financial statements relative to their annual financial statements, which, again, we expect to be well received in the market. So we'll keep discussing IFRS 17 again at the February meeting. Then looking at IBOR reform, so the changes that we're looking at in the context of helping people who are having to change their financial assets and financial liabilities to reference new rates instead of the IBOR rates that are being replaced. We're continuing our work on what we call phase two of the project, which is looking at the effects for reporting entities when they actually change their contracts or their hedging arrangements to reflect the new interest rates. So at this meeting, we talked about the interaction between the project that we finished last year, phase one of the project, how that sort of finishes and how it you feed into phase two. So for those following the project, I think read the paper. It's easier than me explaining what that means. We also looked at whether there were some other standards where we needed to make modifications. And an example there is what would happen if you've got a lease contract and it today references LIBOR and it's changed to refer to a new discount rate. And the board decided that we should also make amendments to IFRS 16 to give the same sorts of modifications as we have for financial instruments in IFRS 9. So we'll propose a change to IFRS 16 as well. We also went on to talk about disclosure because in addition to assisting preparers to know what to do when they change their contracts, we're also very conscious of making sure that the information provided for investors using financial statements is helpful. So we discussed a proposed set of disclosures which we'll put out for comment, which are really designed to help investors understand the effects of IBOR reform on a company, including how they might be changing their risk management as a result of the contractual changes they're having to make.
Thank you, Sue. Back to you, Nick. Can you talk us through the update that the board heard on the business combinations under Common Control Project, please?
So just to remind everyone, the board is looking at two different approaches to accounting for business combinations under Common Control. And we have tentatively agreed that when the receiving entity has a non-controlling interest, to use a current value approach, and when the receiving entity does not have a non-controlling interest, to use a predecessor approach. At our December meeting, we discussed how the current value approach, or the fair value approach, which is based on the acquisition method in IFRS 3, could be modified to provide more useful information. At this meeting, we made tentative decisions on the remaining aspects of how a predecessor approach could be applied. We agreed that on how consideration should be measured and where there's a difference between consideration and net assets, that this should be recognised as a change in equity. We also discussed whether an exception available to private companies under the acquisition method, which would permit use of the predecessor approach, should also be applied or offered to public companies. The board wasn't asked to make any decisions here. The next steps for us will be to talk through the disclosure requirements for both approaches, i.e. the predecessor and the current value approach.
Thank you, Nick. Sue, can you fill us in on the disclosure initiative project?
Sure. So this is a project where we're looking at whether we can make improvements to the way that we draft disclosure requirements with the objective of trying to improve the usefulness of disclosures provided in IFRS financial statements. And what the board's decided to do, as people may know, is really sort of a pilot project where we're looking at a couple of specific standards and just at the disclosure requirements of those standards to see if there's some amendments we could make to try and enhance the usefulness of the disclosures. So at this meeting, we talked about the work that we've been doing on IAS 19, the Employee Benefits Standard. Specifically, we've been working on disclosure objectives that we're considering inserting into IAS 19, particularly focused on expected future cash flows for defined benefit plans. And what we actually did at this meeting was a bit of a deep dive into some of the very specific proposed disclosure objectives and the examples of how those disclosure objectives might be met, the types of information that might meet these new objectives. And what the staff did was quite an interesting sort of side-by-side analysis of the existing disclosure requirements in 19 so we could see what was the same and what was different. So we went through that almost line by line. The next thing we'll do will be to go back to focus on our discussion on the fair value measurement standard, IFRS 13, where we're similarly looking at whether we should amend the standard to include a separate disclosure objective. And the idea will be that later on this year, probably, we'd go out with an exposure draft where people will give us some comments on whether they think these redrafted disclosure objectives and requirements would be helpful to improve disclosure.
Thank you. Before we wrap up this episode, Sue, can you just quickly update us on a couple of other important matters? Firstly, are there any implementation matters worth mentioning?
Asking the chair of the Interpretations Committee if there's anything worth mentioning. Of course, the answer has to be yes. So the board got an update on the November Interpretations Committee meeting, and maybe I'll just mention briefly a couple of topics. One was the important agenda decision that was finalised on how to determine a lease term. And then there was a new issue, which is, I think, an interesting one. People think that what we do is a bit boring. This one's pretty exciting. We talked about how you should account for the proceeds from selling football players. So do you recognise revenue or a gain or loss on sale when you get player transfer payments? So we put a draft agenda decision out for comment, and we've started getting letters back on that. So it's a good example of how topical the Interpretation Committee can be.
And you chat to Petrina Buchanan in a lot more detail about that on the IFRIC podcast, which is available on our podcast channels too. So if our listeners are interested in that specific topic, go and download the latest IFRIC podcast. It's fascinating. Thank you, Sue. We also published a request for information towards the end of January. Nick, perhaps you can tell us a bit more about this.
Yes, so we're currently consulting on the IFRS for SMEs standard. And that's the simplified accounting standard for small and medium-sized entities. Earlier in the podcast, we discussed a project around subsidiaries that are SMEs. And that's work that we've just promoted to a standard-setting project. But it is worth reiterating that these are different projects with different objectives. In our project on IFRS for SMEs, we're seeking views on the extent to which the requirements in this standard should be aligned with full IFRS. Specifically, we are consulting on different approaches to updating the IFRS for SMEs standard, as well as views on how the standard could be aligned with newer IFRS standards, such as IFRS 9, financial instruments, and IFRS 16, leases. You can find out more about the consultation on our website.
Thank you, Nick, and thank you to Sue too for joining us today. As we've already mentioned, you can log onto our website for detailed information on specific projects. Thank you so much for listening, and tune in next month.